This is the March 18 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. Our panelists for the day include Matt Bennett of AgMarket.net out of Windsor, Illinois, Dale Durkles from Grain Cycles in Bloomington, Illinois, and Garrett Toy of AgTraderTalk.com out of Stockton, Illinois. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online, listen to us on demand. Just click and play from WILLAG.org, and there you'll find a podcast page as well where you can subscribe to Commodity Week, the Closing Market Report, and the Illinois Nutrient Loss Reduction Podcast. Just hit subscribe in the players and it'll open up so that you can subscribe to us using Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, Amazon Music, Spotify, and many, many more. Let's start our conversation today with Matt Bennett. He's at agmarket.net. Matt, thank you for being with us. Can you describe for me something that we have not talked about on the radio before related to agmarket.net and how it works with JSA? That's John Stewart and Associates out of St. Joseph, Missouri. And I think maybe if you could tell us what JSA is and then what kind of insight that offers you, it might be worthwhile as a beginning point.
John Stewart and Associates, you know, they're basically dealing with commercial and end user type business. And so, whereas Ag Market is more of dealing with producers, JSA actually does a lot of hedging business with elevators across the country. They've got a very large footprint there. And so, you know, essentially JSA had come to me a long time ago, I guess, and talked about potential of maybe working together at some point. And long story short, we finally got something put together about the time that, you know, we started Ag Market. So it all kind of came together at the same time. But the nice thing about JSA is that you know, they have a lot of eyes on the ground, whether you're talking, you know, CIF values at the Gulf, what do freight rates look like, what's going on the rail, on the river, you name it. They've got a really broad expanse of knowledge and, you know, different people that work within their company and that they're clearing for, basically, that, you know, are able to provide intel and research. And so whenever you merge the two outfits together, I mean, you know, we're basically sister companies. We work well together and we're able to come up with a lot of research and intel, you know, that essentially covers everything from the producer to the end user.
Well, so I want to plumb just a little bit of some of that intel that maybe you're getting at this point about how end users are seeing the very high price of inputs, commodities, corn, soybean, wheat. And what that means in relationship to freight and logistics and just demand over time, and currently during this issue with the Ukrainian war.
Yeah, and so, you know, a couple of different things. You know, whenever you look at what's going on with Ukraine, you know, we actually put a video out this last week. And so for those that don't know, we hired Betsy Gibbon here about a year ago. Betsy was with Farm Journal and Ag Day for several years, and we were able to get her hired on with us, and she does a lot of interviews, and happened to be good friends with a reporter out of Ukraine who had seen me on Market to Market, actually, and reached out, and I've done a couple of webinars for her, actually, for Ukraine growers, and we reached back out to her and said, hey, would you do a webinar with us? We want to get an idea of what's going on over there, what's it look like for exports, what's it look like for plantings. You know, and so actually JSA and Ag Market worked together pretty closely to get as much information as we possibly could and try to get that out to our growers, not only through the webinar that we did, but, you know, through a lot of the research we're putting out. And so, you know, it all kind of goes hand in hand as we start to piece together, you know, how much do we feel like we're going to lose as far as exports are concerned on this marketing year? How much is going to be lost in production for this growing season, and how does that impact the world ledger and balance sheets? And so, you know, we definitely work together, we talk together, whether we're looking at our U.S. supply and demand balance sheet or whether it's the world ledger for both corn, beans, wheat, you name it. And so definitely a lot of good information we've been able to put together. And I think that it's, you know, it's been one of those deals that working together has definitely helped create some synergies that we wouldn't have been able to create otherwise.
So this interview was with Elena, and you'll have to forgive me. I don't know how to pronounce her last name. Naroba is, and she is based in Kyiv. I've had conversations with her via Twitter as well. What did she have to say about what the export picture might look like out of her nation?
Yeah, and so she said there's definitely going to be some major issues as far as being able to get the export business that we've seen, you know, in the past. First of all, you know, logistically, you know, it's not there right now. For instance, all the ports are shut down, and being able to rail out of the country right now is just simply not going to happen on any sort of a grand scale. And so she expects exports to be down dramatically for this marketing year, which, you know, her expectation is that a fair amount of export business will shift over to the U.S., especially with the U.S. being pretty competitive on the world market. Now, one of the most interesting things that she related, you know, in the particular interview we're talking about is that when you start looking at what's going on in the Ukraine as far as planting this year, she feels like they've got all the inputs they need. They've got the seed they need. The fertilizer has been applied. The biggest problem they're going to run into as far as being able to get the acres planted that they're hoping to get planted is going to be fuel. And so, you know, as long as there is any sort of war activity going on whatsoever, the fuel in and around Ukraine is going to be used, you know, for their armed forces, of course. And so then you're going to see a little bit of a issue being able to get the crop in the ground. So right now she's predicting that you'll see a good 30 to 35% drop in plantings, you know, with some of your major crops, whether it's corn, sunflower, you know, a lot of the wheat was winter wheat. So it's already in the ground. It's just going to be a matter of being able to get it harvested in a timely fashion. So their biggest restriction right now is fuel, which I think is something that I wasn't necessarily expecting her to say.
Did she suggest that farmers would prioritize different crops? For instance, I would think sugar beet would be prioritized over everything else. Sunflower is, I think, the largest acreage. I can't quite recall. Wheat maybe.
Yes.
Yeah. And then corn. So would they prioritize corn last, do you suppose?
Yes. I mean, based upon, you know, what she's been told and what she's learned is that, you know, anything that they're going to need for their own country's food needs is going to come first. And so definitely talked about sugar beets being one of the first things, you know, and then of course sunflower is going to be a priority. Corn probably won't be as much of a priority, and that's part of the reason that she's kind of scaling back in what her estimates are for as far as how much corn is going to be produced, how much corn will be available for export. And so, you know, it could definitely have big ramifications on down the road, not only for, you know, for this marketing year, but for next marketing year as well. So at this stage of the game, based upon her information, you know, the Ag Market JSA teams have definitely been talking about world supply continuing to restrict, even if we see a record crop out of the safrinha crop down in Brazil, which right now looks like could be a very distinct possibility. And so, you know, if you would have a huge crop there, which would be a stark contrast to last year, you know, and you still tighten world supplies, that's definitely something world buyers are going to take note of.
Have you discussed demand destruction at all at this point?
We have definitely discussed, you know, some demand destruction, but at the same time, you know, it's a very interesting dynamic in that you've got so many different things going on. The Chinese are going to continue to buy U.S. corn, and I think most of your world buyers that we talk to are under the impression that they're still going to be buying corn, and it's probably going to have to come out of the U.S. at least until you get into that June, July time frame. You know, maybe they'll go to South America and buy some corn. That hasn't been a feature that they've been over that they've done to any great degree in the past. But you know, they definitely bought a lot of soybeans out of the Southern Hemisphere. But it's going to be interesting moving forward to see, you know, what happens as far as, you know, I've had a lot of people say, well, last year people fed cheap feed wheat. Well, you know, there's no such thing as cheap feed wheat anymore, and so Most likely, you're going to see corn heavily in rations still. And I've got to think that you're going to see demand stay very strong. I think you'll get into a food versus fuel debate at some point. But at the same time, you've got some folks pushing for the government to push towards an E15. And so, you know, if you get E15 to try to lower fuel prices, for instance, that's definitely going to gobble up more corn than what we're currently forecasting. So, you know, there's a lot of different things to consider right now, Todd. I think as a producer, we can certainly get caught up in the weeds. We just have to be careful to not lose sight of the fact that we're still staring, for instance, you know, July corn at 710 and these corn at 644, whether soybeans for November out at 1470. I mean, these are price levels that we've been able to get, you know, the market's been able to push up to these levels despite the fact that we just raised a monster crop this last year, all-time record corn yield. And so, you know, we don't want to get caught up in the weeds too much, but there's definitely a lot going on out there.
That's Matt Bennett. He's with AgMarket.net. I spoke with him on Friday morning, along with Dale Durkles of Grain Cycles out of Bloomington, Illinois. I asked Dale to reach back into his mind to give us an idea of how the commodity markets deal with things like war.
Well, of modern times, when you think of war, there are two that easily come to a lot of people's mind. One of those was the Gulf War back in the early 90s. We can also go back, and another war that kind of gets forgotten a little bit was the Falklands War. That was over an island in the South Pacific and a conflict between Great Britain and Argentina. But for a while, it pulled Argentine soybeans and products off the market out of the world trade mix. So that's another one that really kind of jumps out to me and has some relevance here at this juncture.
So when you think about those, what is the relevance?
Well, I think, you know, the whole situation when we talk about war really is, you know, the span of time that war occurs. You know, the Falklands War, that was a conflict that lasted 6-8 weeks, something like that. And as soon as it was over, you know, the soybean market at that point continued its merry move downward back in 1982. The Gulf War, you know, somewhat the same thing, although maybe a little bit longer lasting. You know, I think when you look at war, you're trying to really identify, okay, where's the peak emotional attitude of war? And when you get to the peak emotion of any particular war, then you're also probably finding peak price structure. And I think there's a possibility, although we don't know for sure, that maybe we pass that in the crude oil market in the current situation.
Yeah, it feels like that was the case. In fact, the market feels like it's starting to get its rhythm back at the end of this week. I don't know whether that's what you're seeing and feeling in the market at the moment or not.
It is to a certain degree. You know, I think markets really starting to move back more into more traditional modes of looking at things, even in the crude oil market. I think we're moving back there. One thing that came out in here today, there's talk out of Indonesia that they're going to move their biodiesel from a B30 down to a B20. So when we look at that, we've got to start to question, even in the petroleum market, are we seeing some demand being undermined with the current price structure we're having, not only in the veg oil side of the market that would pertain to, but even in the base energy side, you know, the crude oil market and crude oil products themselves. Are we seeing these high price levels starting to diminish demand? And, you know, we got to start to try to figure out where that occurs.
Talk a little bit about cycles for me, where you think we are in cycles, how war moves them around, if at all, and when we might get back on the beat.
You know, trying to figure out where they are in war, I hadn't gone back and even looked at that at a particular moment. I hadn't thought about that so much. The one thing I've always been stepped with here, and you know, the corn is a little different than the beans. The beans, I've long had some kind of a quote-unquote short-term cyclic low in here, a 32-week low coming in sometime in late April, maybe early May. It could stretch into early June, so I still see some downside when I look at those cyclic parameters at this juncture. You know, we're continuing to get talk about the South American crops, and now we're talking about Argentina and change in export policy there with taxes and stuff. But I think we've gotten prices high enough that those kinds of issues are not going to be long lasting. You know, they're good for a day or two and then not going on. Corn, I had a cyclic low due in right in early February, and so maybe that initial break we had off the highs was it. And then I have to go out, you know, roughly about 20 weeks from there to see the next low. But the long term, they've really not been disrupted just yet. The long term cyclic parameters call for 2-year lows in corn and beans, both towards the end of this calendar year.
And so when you put those in place, what kind of projections do you have?
I haven't developed any because I'm waiting for a high to be confirmed and identified before I start talking about how far down we might go.
But, I get that.
But it is interesting in the short term. And when I look at the May contracts, corn, wheat, and beans, and if there's any two markets I watch every day when I take a look at the screen, I look at wheat and I look at crude oil. Those, to me, are the two most important markets to kind of track at this point. But in the grain specifically, it's kind of ironic. The quarters seem to be playing out 10 and a quarter, 16 and a quarter, and 7 and a quarter on May wheat, May beans, May corn. If those are violated, it's going to really start to open up more downside risk in those markets.
What do you think the fundamentals look like at this point around the planet?
They're in a jumble. And in particular, the thing that I started to talk about, and there was a news story on Reuters about it here today even that came out. When this whole Ukrainian conflict started, you know, and we started to get into it and it looked like it was going to have some lasting effect to it, we don't know how long, and especially when we started throwing on sanctions on the Russians, that I saw we were going to see a trading block that was going to be comprised of Russia and China, and not knowing how the whole control of Ukraine was going to turn out, maybe Ukraine thrown into that. But I think we're going to evolve into a trading bloc that's going to be Russia and China trading amongst each other. China's going to look to Russia to source energy, going to look to Russia to source cereal grains, going to still have to look to the rest of the world to source oil seeds and products themselves. But I see that duo trading bloc between Russia and China, and then you see the rest of the world. And I think we've got to start looking at corn, wheat, in those two parameters at this point, trying to figure out, you know, what's that trading bloc going to do, and how are they going to trade amongst each other, and how is this going to affect the rest of the world? I mean, it's all the way to the point that China could actually buy wheat out of Russia, actually more than what their needs might be to import, and in turn sell some of their own wheat into the rest of the world. And so, you know, you get all these complex, confusing kind of possibilities out there, and so you can't really identify them real easily right now.
It would be an interesting turn of events to have that much grain locked up into those two nations. At this point, China is sometimes in the market as a seller, most of the time not. I guess your suggestion is that if they're able to move grain from the Black Sea area in large amounts, that they might open up their own stores?
They could, and there's nothing to prevent them from selling their own corn, their own wheat into the world themselves and source a lot of their needs that they may have, whatever they may be, on the import side out of the Black Sea itself, and then resell some of their own product into the world. I mean, all that's a possibility, and there's no way and there's no structure in place that says they cannot do that. And I don't think anybody in the world will go that direction. So indirectly, you know, we may see corn and wheat in particular moving out of the Black Sea into the world pipeline. It won't be a direct sale to the world out of Russia necessarily, but it could be something that has an indirect possibility.
So if the sanctions stay in place, it would just be a matter of moving probably both crude and corn and wheat through a different channel once it's on the open seas, reflagging it and pushing it back into the marketplace.
Crude oil is the only one that's really kind of the odd man out simply because of the size of exporter of crude that Russia is. And so you still end up, I've seen some people talking about, you might be talking about 4 billion barrels a day that could end up being missing in the world pipeline somehow, simply that China doesn't have necessarily the kind of demand needs for Russian crude oil that, and they aren't a producer in any major stake to resell any along into the world. But, maybe they source more of their crude oil out of Russia itself and fully absorb what they get out of Russia and resell what they're already committed and contracted to buy out of places like Saudi Arabia. So, we've got to really look at the possibility we could have these indirect trade flows that you can't easily quantify at this point in time, but certainly are some kind of a possibility.
What advice do you have for farmers today?
I tell you, I still think I look at new crop, and because of those two-year lows out there, I still got to be pricing some new crop corn and beans. I mean, December corn at $6.40, $6.50, and November beans at $14.50 and up, is not a bad place to get some sales on the books. Maybe you're a little careful, a little cautious before we get into planting on quantity, but certainly, I think 25-30% is really a good structure to have in place right now, especially given the fact that we've got high crop insurance guarantees behind both of these at this point. And then, as much as farmers out there want to be bullish and be optimistic, and as much as they hear a lot of possibilities about that, you can't ignore the possibility we don't repeat a 2008 kind of parameter at this point in time, where things really hit a pretty hard snag, because I think eventually the market's going to come around to recognize that these high energy prices and some of the other things that have gone on are not going to probably trigger off at least a mild, if not short-lived, recession in the world, and especially here in the U.S. So, and that would have negative consequences potentially on prices if the crop is decent. And we have a lot more good crops than we have bad crops. So you got to start with the premise that, I'm going to have an average to maybe a little above average crop.
Dale Durkles is with Grain Cycles out of Bloomington, Illinois. Garrett Toy is here as well. He's with AgTraderTalk.com. And he joins us from Stockton, Illinois. Thank you, Garrett, for taking some time today. I know you've been thinking about the export market some and end users. Can we begin with the export market and what influence you think the Ukrainian war with Russia has had on it and how it's been changing over the last 3 weeks?
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously a lot of moving parts here. I mean, if we go back to the USDA numbers, last week, and even while the USDA cut, Ukraine corn export numbers, the fact of the matter is that, the USDA is assuming that there's 7 million metric ton of corn that Ukraine is still going to ship at this point. And I'm not necessarily sure that is to be a given. And I think that, while the wheat market is kind of in its own little planet here, I think the fact of the matter is, if you look at real crop export sales in both corn and soybeans, obviously soybeans, driven by South American issues, but at least in corn, we have a massive global cash short due to the Ukraine situation. And that's been evidenced by export sales over the last 2 weeks of nearly 4.5 million metric ton of corn sales. The country that impacts the most is China. We've seen the larger unknown sales. They haven't put in the faceplate on it, but they did buy their first cargoes of new crop corn. And seasonally, this is about the time when they do start to accumulate those purchases. But the fact of the matter is that we're doing massive export sales when corn is in the front end is $7. And I think that there's, at some point the panic's going to subside a little bit, but near term, I mean, there's people that just have to get coverage no matter what. And that's where we're at on the export front.
I know that you work with end users. What are they telling you about their needs and when and if they might find demand destruction?
The end users we work with, it's twofold. I think some of our big picture end users, actually have coverage locked in through the end of the year, and are actually starting to have some conversations about how far out into first quarter 2023 they start to look at coverage. This was predominantly largely before the Ukraine-Russian blowup. Domestic end users, though, I think that you know, obviously, you know, like ethanol plants, things of that sort, are being influenced just by the markets and, you know, farmers selling. And, you know, I think we've seen the spread volatility in the May-July, and we've, you know, I think that's one thing that, you know, producers need to have explained to them is what's happening in these spreads and why you're not seeing basis bid off of the May contract right now. But, you know, the fact of the matter is if we had such a sharp rally in wheat, we had a $4 rally essentially in a week's time at one point, and corn as well, that, you know, say an ethanol plant grinds a million bushel a month and they buy 4 million bushels, you know, in a week's time, well, then obviously they're covered for the next 4 months, you know. So you also have the aspect of, you know, just trying to get away from the spread volatility that you have because of that aforementioned, you know, cash short in the short in the front end that you know, market between market flows, order flow, and you know, cash consumption needs we're forced to cover. And that's kind of where you're at, where you're seeing, you know, a lot of these end users that it's March 18th and they're bidding off of the July contract or, you know, whatnot. They're largely staying away from the May contracts just because we're most likely going to have a large amount of volatility here over the next 4 to 6 weeks.
How do farmers deal with the changes in the marketplace for both old and new crop corn and soybeans, in your opinion?
Well, it's just another step. I mean, it may not be as you know, it may not be as straightforward of marketing as what it had been, but it just, you just have to calculate the spread. I mean, most times, you know, if they're bidding off July after the July contract, the basis is going to accommodate that, and the spread is trading. Bear with me here. It's currently trading 32 cents, or, you know, somewhere in there. So the difference of whether they're bidding up May or bidding up July is going to be 30-some cents. So it makes one more thing that they kind of have to watch is where the spread is at. But, you know, realizing that is essentially the difference between the cash bid, you know, from one place to the other. Creates a little bit more work, one more math equation, but it's not that big of a deal. And it's not scary by any means. You just have to know what you're looking for and seek that out.
Are you of the mind that producers need to market, or can they stand aside and wait for the volatility to settle down?
If they haven't by now, I mean, we've already seen, I think, you know, I think we've put the highs in on wheat, obviously. But corn, you know, I don't know. I mean, I think the farmer has been a prudent marketer. I don't think there's much beans left out there to sell. And I think that for the most part, you know, corn marketings are probably last down to their last 20 or 25%. I mean, it's not only a function of the price, but it's also a function of the calendar. And I think that last 25% that's going to get sold is going to depend on how planting goes over the next 4 to 6 weeks. And then we start to get into pollination in 8 weeks. So I think for the most part, I mean, the farmer still needs to be involved. I mean, you can have a bullish sentiment. I mean, I am friendly to these markets just because part of the reason is I think that, you know, the fact of the matter is that we're doing so much export business and the situation in Ukraine is so dire that kind of countervails that even if the funds dump at some point, there's going to be an end user there, some country that's going to try to get food coverage on any sort of weakness. The thing that kind of keeps me awake at night is the cash outflows that we're making on input costs, fertilizer, which that situation, you know, has not improved any. And, you know, the amount of money that's still in this market that just a hint of any weather this summer, any hiccup. I mean, this situation really isn't one that it's going to be rectified with one good crop. this is going to be a situation that's going to be rectified over two or three good crops, and potentially policy changes. And I think that the Biden administration has every option on the table, whether it's, RFS or it's CRP or what sort of thing. But, we're one major weather forecast to come in with a hot, dry forecast in July, to having explosive markets. And I think that what we saw in wheat, once liquidity dries up, it becomes a pretty scary market, So, I mean, there's other risks that the farmer has to realize in doing that. It's doing so is that it's going to take, it's going to take capital, it's going to take credit in order to ride out these waves.
You've been listening to Commodity Week from Illinois Public Media. You may hear the whole of the program online anytime you'd like at WILLAG.org. Our thanks go to our panelists today, including Matt Bennett from AgMarket.net out of Windsor, Illinois, Dale Durkles from Grain Cycles in Bloomington, Illinois, and Garrett Toy of AgTraderTalk.com out of Stockton, Illinois. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.